Welcome to the Bankers for Good podcast, where we talk about the latest banking topics and how they impact our community. We're passionate about banking because banking changes lives, and strong communities require strong banks. We hope you'll subscribe, and if there's a topic you'd like to hear more about, let us know in the Bankers for Good community. This is Howard Headley. I'm the CEO of the Utah Bankers Association. I'm here today with Peter Watkins, my co-host.
Howard, hello. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Tell us why you started the podcast.
Well, we started this podcast to highlight the relationship between bankers and the communities that they serve. Every good banker knows that a bank can only be as strong as the community it serves, and that there's this relationship. Strong communities make strong banks and vice versa. Unfortunately, over the last few years, the crisis and all the political blame game going around separated that out. And there's been this perception that banks are over in this corner and the people in the community over in this corner, and that their interests aren't necessarily aligned. And that's been good for some politicians. But it really isn't the reality of how communities work. Communities, strong communities, they rely on strong banks. Banks are just a collection of the people in the community, the depositors, the borrowers. If they're struggling, you know, the bank's going to struggle.
Yeah.
If the bank's struggling, they're going to struggle. So our fortunes are really tied together, and it's important that bankers and the people in the community understand how those fortunes are tied together.
All right. So how did we get to this point?
Well, it's been fascinating. You know, I've been here for 20-some years now working in the industry, and the crisis was brutal, right? It was scary. It was extreme. The stakes were high. And so we were all trying to just get through it. But as I look back on it now, I see, you know, again, I refer to this blame game. In politics is all about blaming somebody else,
right?
So that voters are angry with somebody else. And you see it on the news, and it's fascinating to see how that worked. Nobody in Washington wanted anybody, the voters, to blame them for their policies that led to the crisis. Mm-hmm. And so they had to come out and say, hey, who else can we blame? So they blamed the banks, right? And right there was the big problem. When they say the word bank.
Yeah. Who are the banks?
They weren't really even talking about banks. In purpose of this podcast, we're talking about banks, FDIC-insured banks, places where you can take your money and deposit it, and it's insured and it's safe, right?
Yeah.
That's the definition of a bank. And, you know, here in Utah, you can't even use the word bank unless you're FDIC-insured. But that doesn't mean that the people on the news can't use the word bank whenever they want.
Yeah.
And so they were using the word bank to talk about any number of institutions. During the crisis, primarily entities like, you know, AIG or Lehman Brothers. And they were really ever talking about a real bank. It was just an easy word to use to talk about this financially oriented entity. I remember watching that movie, The Big Short, you know, and I thought it was, you know, people always look at me and say, hey, did you see that movie? What do you think of it? Thinking that I'm going to be all offended about it, you know,
right. As
a representative of the banks. And on the contrary, I thought the movie was really well done. I liked the style of it. The actors were really good. If you watch that movie, it's really pretty educational, too. It's kind of done as an educational. They kind of explain these concepts and these. I thought that was really helpful.
Yeah.
The problem is, if you could change one thing about the movie, is take every time they use the word bank in the movie and remove it, because they were not typically, when they said the word bank, they were not talking about FDIC insured banks. They were talking about these Wall Street institutions that were doing all these, you know, innovative things, creative things. Some people think, you know, illegal things, whatever.
Right.
And the media just refers to them as banks because it's easy. But they're not banks, and they're not the banks that we're on this podcast to talk about, right? We're talking about the banks in the community that collect those deposits, that make those loans to the businesses in those communities and the people, the families in those communities, and are really a reflection of those communities. If the people borrowing those car loans begin to struggle, guess what? the bank's going to struggle.
The banks are going to struggle.
If the people in the community don't have any money to deposit in the banks, the banks...
There's no money to lend.
Exactly. And so we're really just one with the communities that we serve. And these entities that they were talking about in during the crisis and referring to as banks really weren't banks at all. But it served the purpose for members of Congress, right?
Right.
It deflected enough attention away from the policies that they had adopted that led those Wall Street firms to build those exotic vehicles and take those risks, that then you end up with all this regulation.
Right. And that's what I was going to ask you about next, because there was a reaction from Congress.
Yeah. And it was so crazy because they went back, and the easiest people to regulate are these real banks in our communities. They already have a big structure around them, so it's easy to just layer more regulations on them. And that's what they did, and it evolved.
How has it impacted these banks, these community banks especially?
Well, it was crazy. I mean, like the Volcker Rule, for example.
Yeah.
I mean, the Volcker Rule doesn't apply to 90%
and what is it?
Of the banks. I'm not going to get into the details of it because, it doesn't apply really to a real bank. The banks that are really big and they may have different services and get involved in different lines of business. But for the purpose of this podcast, the banks that we're talking about really don't get involved in this. But they still had to hire attorneys. They still had to read all the new regulations and figure out, how does this apply to me? Well, it doesn't really apply to me. Well, we still have to adopt these policies so that when the regulators come, they know that we've looked at it, that we're constantly monitoring it, that we've got these safeguards in place. It cost a lot of money, and it was completely a waste of time. Now, how many, 8 years, 10 years after they passed Dodd-Frank, Congress came back and said, okay, we got that wrong.
Yeah.
You've all spent all this money. We're just going to exempt all these smaller banks from this whole issue of Volcker. Great. But the money was spent, and that gets passed on. Somebody has to pay that.
Right.
Again, a bank is not this separate entity that just like manufactures money. There's only a couple places you can look to for these costs. And so it you can't kick a bank without kicking the community that it serves. And these politicians that are out there and getting elected with these promises that we're going to kick the banks, it's like, do people understand that what they're talking about is kicking the communities those banks serve?
What were some of the more egregious things you saw after they passed off, Frank?
Well, I mean, the Volcker Rule was a good example. There was a ton of them. Every banker was just scratching their head.
How much time do we have?
One that hasn't even been implemented yet that I think is fascinating. They want us to collect all this data around small business loans. And they've been struggling. I mean, here, 10 years later, they're still trying to figure out how to implement it. For example, I have one little bank here in Utah that makes all these business loans all across the country. Really important stuff that they do. If they have to implement this one regulation, they'll have more employees at the bank administering this one new regulation than all the employees they have at the bank right now.
Oh my goodness.
How do you deal with those costs?
So how do we fix this?
Well, we can go to Congress, we can go to the regulators, we do what we do, and it gets tiring, let's be honest with you. And what I've decided, one of the reasons why we want to do this podcast is help people understand. We've got to help people understand the relationship between real banks and the communities they serve so that they can understand, when a politician's out there saying, we're going to kick these banks, they what they hear is, oh, that's going to affect me. That's going to affect my community.
People need to understand that.
They need to understand that the banks are not this separate entity over here that we can all point at and blame for something.
Right.
Banks are their depositors and their borrowers. And when you do something to punish the banks, you're going to punish the communities that those banks serve.
So you recently launched a Bankers for Good online community.
Yeah.
What happens if I go there?
Our goal is to just begin that educational process and help people understand and see that connection between the bank and the communities they serve. every good banker understands if there's a problem in my community, it's going to find its way to my bank, right? Sooner or later, it's going to, is homelessness, you know, whatever it might be, affordable housing, just all those issues, bad credit, too much debt. It's going to find its way. It's going to affect the bank. And so bankers are smart and they get out in front of that. And they say, if we can go out and we can fix this problem, nip it in the bud, figure out a solution, get everybody together, sit around a table, solve that problem in this community, then the community is going to be stronger. The bank's going to be stronger. Our interests are completely aligned. And so we have this community called the Bankers for Good community where people, we have videos that just show how this works, how bankers are out addressing issues of homelessness, addressing issues of intergenerational poverty, hunger, whatever they might be, discrimination. We get involved in all those issues. We support pretty much every nonprofit in the community has a banker that serves on a board or get contributions.
Sure.
You know, the banks are involved in those things in an effort to try to strengthen their community. So that on this community, you'll be able to find, you know, videos, vignettes, these podcasts that explain and kind of connect the dots and help people reconnect banks and communities.
That's great. How do I find it?
Well, it should be as easy as going and Googling on hashtag bankers for good, number four, bankers for good.
Bankers for the number four.
Yeah.
Good.
And one of the things that we highlight on this page, you know, in this community are, we talk to actual bankers. You know, it's so fascinating to me. I've been here again 20 some years and none of the bankers that I work with, very, very few ever intended to be bankers, right?
Yeah.
They went to college, they got their education and now most of the bankers I work with say they're accidental bankers. They get in and then they see what their bank is doing in the community and they fall in love with that. They
accidental banker.
That's what I want. I want a good job. I want good benefits. I want to be involved helping people and I want to be building my community. And once they get in, they don't. And so that's a little play on this bankers for good.
Yeah.
Because once you're a banker and you get that satisfaction of being involved and building your community, I don't know many people that leave the banking industry and never come back. It's really, that's the good part of this. And so I think that helps tell the story when you listen to those bankers talk about what they love about their jobs. They talk about that, and that helps people to I see that the relationship to my bank and my community, that those interests are tied together. It's one and the same.
Yeah.
The only other thing that I would say on there that we're trying to also in the community address is you go to a party on the weekend if you work at a bank.
Sure. Yeah.
And you go to a party and somebody says, they repeat something ignorant that they've heard on some cable news channel.
Yeah.
And the banker has a choice. They can either like confront them or just step back and take it. And for the last 10 years, bankers are just going to step back and take it. And they don't want to cause a scene. And they may not even have a really good answer, you know, to what was said. And hopefully they'll find things in this community where they can say, hey, you know what? I've got a little video. I'm going to send that to you and see if that doesn't address that concern that you have. Or, you know, that's not actually the way that works. Yeah. You know, the FDIC thing, that's not how it works. I've got a video here that I can send you. I'll send that to you on Monday when I get back to the office and see if that doesn't answer your question. So we want to help give bankers those tools, resources to reach out to the people they're working with and help them understand the banking business. And we're happy to share that.
I think that sounds great. Well, I think that's a great introduction to the goals for the podcast.
Thanks, Peter.
Thanks, Howard.
Well, that's all the time we have for our podcast today. Thanks for joining us. We hope you'll subscribe to the Bankers for Good podcast and be sure to follow our Bankers for Good hashtag on LinkedIn. That's hashtag Bankers, the number four, good on LinkedIn. If there's a particular topic you'd like to see us cover on this podcast, go to the Bankers for Good community and drop us a note. And remember, when bankers see the good they can do in the community, they become bankers for good.